Don't say we don't keep things fresh here at the Celtic Underground podcast. Look at that. The music has moved to the start and then I start talking pish. Anyway, enough of that. This is a football fans podcast and people behind CelticUnderground.net. We lost a game of football at the weekend and played abysmally. So what else could I do? We get Mark Cooper on to discuss various things about that game. Also to talk about what we should do about the restructuring of the football management division at Celtic Park. So, interesting chat. As I speak tonight, Rafa Benitez has leapt up to being favourite for the manager's job. I think a few bob changes the odds. Anyway, it's enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark.
People might need some tension to relax.
So I am joined now by Mark Cooper. I normally ask Mark how he is and how's the weather in South America, but I'm not going to ask how he is today because obviously we're all so sombre following yesterday's game. So how are you feeling following yesterday's game, Mark?
Well, actually, usually when I'm on, it's after defeat, so...
You're a Jonah.
Yeah, fine. The game, everyone kind of half expected it, didn't they? Like, I think everyone was so, like, blasé about going into the game. Now, there's obviously a difference between the fans' kind of perspective and what's actually going on inside the squad.
Yeah.
But just from the fans, like, it seemed, to me at least, it seemed, like, less intense. Like, usually in a Celtic Rangers game, I'm kind of, you know, so concentrated in every loose ball, every throw-in, it's screaming at a referee or whatever. And this game, I was kind of just watching, not like passively, but I was just kind of, I don't know, not as engaged as if we were still trying to win the league, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I felt part of the issue there was, there was some comments from some of the Celtic players that we're going to get revenge because we played so poorly in January. I think it was just a perception of we blew them away in the first half at Celtic Park. It was 1-0, you know, it was 0-0 actually, was it not? But, you know, it was 1-0 at half time and we were going to thump, you know, we could have gone on if we'd really put the foot down, we could have gone on and scored 4 or 5 last time at Celtic Park.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just an assumption that January was the New Year game was a blip. The players, Callum McGregor and Scott Brown, have been talking about wanting revenge. And I think it was just an assumption from the fans that the players were just going to turn up and put in the performance that they didn't put in December and we'd win comfortably.
Do you think?
Certainly the fans I spoke to.
Going into it, I was kind of thinking, well, we're not holding on to the ball in the same way that we were under Rodgers. And I know, like, we might have, you know, 65% possession and whatever against, you know, Kilmarnock and Livingston. But it's not the same kind of way that Rodgers was going through the phases and kind of stylistically, like, well, also, here's 2 points. That since Elena's come in, McGregor's form's dipped.
Yeah.
He's less influential in the play. Rogic, who's been coming back from an injury, isn't in his full kind of flow. Rogic usually needs, you know, about, you know, 6 weeks or whatever to get fully up to it, and then he's a very good player.
Well, you just reminded me, he played yesterday, didn't he?
Aye, very good. I remember. I wish we could now just press play and go for it. I remember chatting about 2 years ago when you were just slating Rogic in every Celtic Rangers game. And then he went through about 5-6 in a row where he always scored. But yeah.
He was like a man down though yesterday. He was like
No, completely. Completely, yeah.
Which is why they bossed it. I mean, we'll get on to it in a minute, but for me, it's why they bossed the game. Because Davis just played in the space around our midfield because our midfield didn't exist.
Yeah, yeah. And also, Yeah, I agree with that, and also that the fullbacks are hitting kind of more hopeful 20, 30 yard passes up the flanks. Whereas, like, I wrote this in a message on Twitter the other day, that before under Rodgers, that McGregor would be kind of like coming back and maybe a wee bit withdrawn, and the fullbacks would kind of find them inside, not under that much pressure,
mm-hmm.
like as if he was kind of further up the pitch, and then he just kind of links up play and we just kind of have more security. It's kind of more controlled possession immediately, rather than say a fullback's kind of midway inside their own half and he's under pressure. If he's then hitting that like 20, 30 yard ball up to Burke or Mikey Johnson, and half the time it's bouncing off them, like, that doesn't create, and then it just becomes like pinball.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had what, Kamara, Arfield and Davis in there just kind of snapping up, you know, as much as they could, and against Rogic and McGregor, basically, with Brown withdrawn.
I mean, we'll get on to the team and everything, but just while you're talking about that, do you think part of the problem might be Lennon's come in, hasn't wanted to change that much, but the one thing he has felt is that we overpassed under Brendan, and is just trying to get him to be a wee bit more direct, but the consequence of not really having that much time to work on it and not wanting to massively overhaul is that it's a bit of an, it's neither a properly coherent, slightly more direct passing system, nor is it the Brendan Rodgers system. It's actually just the players hoofing it up the park.
Possibly. And to be honest, I was reading some of the stuff about Lennon today, and I kind of felt sorry for him, and I think it's kind of a wee bit unjustified, because this isn't his team.
Yeah.
And the style of play that he would quite like, we're assuming, you know, that we saw, what, 4 or 5 years ago. Those players, maybe he's about 4 players short for that style. Mm-hmm. To have definitely a penalty box striker, I would assume he would want 2 kind of swarming midfielders in the way that we had Ledley, Kyle, Wanyama, even Mulgrew played in that kind of defensive midfield role, where they were just kind of mopping up loose balls and kind of had a lot of pressure, and, you know, and he's got, you know, a pretty established midfield kind of that Rodgers had, with Brown as a sitting player and then McGregor, player of the year, you're not going to drop him.
Yeah.
Rogic, and what possibly could have played in Cham, but he seemingly hasn't really wanted to play in Cham that much.
I think because Cham has not turned up in a couple of performances under things under Lennon.
Yeah.
I mean, after about 20 minutes, you know, I'm not going to pick on Rogic, so I'll use a different player for my analogy. 5 minutes into Celtic Rangers games under Martin O'Neill, you knew whether Chris Sutton was going to win you the game or would have been better getting subbed after 5 minutes. Because he was just not going to bother for the rest. He was going to go around trying to get himself booked and just play like a huffy player. Inside the first 5-10 minutes, you knew. And after 15-20 minutes yesterday, I thought you could take Rogic off now and put in Chavon.
Mm-hmm.
To give us something in the middle of the park. Because I do think part of Rogic's problem this season, I mean, I can't think of a decent performance Rogic has put in all season, right? I do think that's your point of he needs 5-6 games in a row to turn into that player. And because of injuries and because of a change of manager when he's come back from the most recent injury, he's, even when he's been fit, he's been in and out of the team because he's been anonymous for a game. So he's then been taken out for 2 games.
I think you're right. Obviously, you're not actually going to take him off after 20 minutes.
No, but the principle is...
I agree with you. Like, in Cham's substitution, when it was 1-0, I was writing on Twitter, we need to get hold of the ball here.
Well, that's why why you're looking to take Rogic off, because the ball's just bouncing off him when it goes to him. So sticking Cham, because we just need to hold the ball.
Yeah. I said in Cham, and I was also thinking Beaton as well, just to get some sort of control in the middle of the park and just start, you know, slowly passing it around and, you know, building into the game again.
So I tell you what we'll do. We'll talk about the game, the team, the game, and then that naturally will lead on to the manager, right? And so, first of all, the team. So the
to
team,
be honest, I didn't think the team was that much of a surprise.
No, I mean, that's what I was just going to say. The team was Bain, Lustig, Aya, Simonovic, Hayes, Brown, McGregor, Rogic, Johnson, Buck, or Johnson, Weir, Buck. Johnson, yeah. Edward, Buck.
Yeah. I'm, I had to get up at about 7 in the morning to watch a game. And it started at 8, see. And so I first looked at the lineup, say, 7:30 in the morning. And in fact, before the lineup, I just saw like a torrent of kind of messages going, "What is that team? What is that team?" And I genuinely thought like Okoflex and Dembele were playing. The amount of like, and then I saw a team, and I was like, "Well, that's basically going to be the team, right? Possibly you have Sinclair there instead of Johnston." But he's barely played Sinclair. But, you know, that would have been a more probable starter there. But apart from that, that was basically the team. And, obviously, I don't even know what we're going to say. We basically already said.
The only thing I would say is, it looked to me from the way that they then... I mean, you're watching it on the telly, and I always find it more difficult to be 100% certain of the formation on the telly, because particularly if the ball's not going to our forwards, it's really difficult to actually be 100% certain about how our front three or four are lining up. But it did look to me like we were pretty much playing with three at the back, with Hayes and Mikey Johnson as wing-backs.
Well, that's what my brother Vinny kind of said, that
like a 3-4-1-2.
Yeah, maybe don't play Johnson as a wing-back next time.
Yeah, so...
He was getting it pretty deep, wasn't he? Because like Lustig, there's a few times when, obviously, Lustig kind of made the initial mistake, and then Johnson kind of naively came back
and it was
a pretty naive foul though.
Lustig, who went into the game with a hamstring injury. And then so the goal. Lustig's at fault for the initial. Then Johnson commits the goal.
I knew of the goal as Rangers were kicking off due to the Celtic TV stream. So literally, the game kicks off, and it's like 10 seconds into the game, and I just get a torrent of messages on my phone going after, and then I'm just watching the next 2 minutes, just knowing I'm wondering how we're going to concede this goal.
you know you're behind, but you don't know how far you're behind.
Yeah.
So every bit past, you're thinking, how can this turn into a goal?
Yeah.
How's this going to turn into a goal? So who was at fault for the goal? Was Bain at fault, do you think?
I think so. It was kind of like the Hedman situation out in Munich when Mackay crossed it in. I think if a ball's coming how many yards? Almost 40 yards?
Yeah.
35 yards? And it isn't really, like Hedman, there's that kind of reticence for the goalkeeper to fully commit because it's coming in at a height that possibly someone might get ahead to it. And so he's kind of slightly stuck in the middle of a goal, but at the same time.
But you've got to make a judgment of picking. I'm either going to follow this ball and go for it going in the far corner, or if somebody gets a touch on it, it's going to go the opposite way. So you might as well follow it, and if somebody then gets a touch on it, it's a goal. Because if you don't follow it, it's a goal. So, it's always difficult to then get into a game when you're a goal down after 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Or a game like that.
Yeah, but even like the next like 10, 15 minutes were kind of fine. Like, not that we really did anything, but we had quite a bit of the... Like, we were probably better at that stage than we were at almost any in the second half.
Last 10 minutes of the first half, you thought, right, okay, we're a better team now. They're not doing anything in particular. We're not particularly doing anything, but we're playing on the front foot as opposed to playing the back foot. Uh-huh. And then second half was just the second half. So I was watching the game on Sky on my tablet. So I was about 20 seconds behind what was happening. So, like you, I got a text. So, for example, I got a text saying, "Oh, for fuck's sake, Burke."
Uh-huh.
And then saw the chance that Burke should have put in the back of the net.
That was at 2-0, though, wasn't it?
That was at 2-0. I sent a text to a few people, and then about 10 seconds after I sent the text, so they would have been thinking I'd sent the text as the stat came up, I sent a text saying, "Have we made Fotheringham make a save today?" And then the next minute, a stat came up saying we did one shot and none on target at that point.
Now, something I didn't see, and I'm not sure if you guys did see, for the corner when Flanagan elbowed Brown, was the ball in play?
It seems to be that it was. At the time, I thought it wasn't, but it seems to be... I've not gone backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. It seems to be that it was maybe about a second before it went... A second or 2 seconds before it went into play that he did the elbow. And then the rest really blew when the ball was then hit. But, see that elbow?
Mm-hmm.
See, for me, that's either a red card or no card.
Yeah, completely.
And what I mean by that is, it's either a red card because he's seen it, or it's no card because he didn't see it. It cannot. It's impossible to be a yellow card.
It is impossible. Apart from that, he actually had an okay game, though.
Yeah.
The referee is. He was fine. Apart from missing a red card.
What did you make of Lennon's substitutions?
As we kind of touched on before, I would have had Ncham on after about 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm. One of my issues with Lennon that I had a bit of an issue with Lennon when he was first manager, not that he's permanent manager now, was see if Lennon got the team and the system right for a game, we won the game for a big game, we won the game like Barcelona. See if Lennon got the team and the system wrong for a big game. One of my frustrations was that he didn't make major changes to try and get the system right midway, like Brendan had quite a reputation for doing. Obviously not Europe for Brendan, but as Brendan had a reputation for doing, where he would change this, particularly in the first season, change the system. Change the dynamic of a game. I can vividly remember, and this was the other thing about Lennon, the first time having beaten Barcelona, if you then went to criticise Lennon in any game, either online, or I can remember my brother shouting, because one of my irritations was that Lennon wouldn't make substitutions until about the 70th, 75th minute in a game. I remember my brother shouting, "For fuck's sake, Lennon, make the change," and the guy in front turning around and saying, "We beat Barcelona, give the guy a break." And for about a year, you couldn't criticise Lennon because we'd beaten Barcelona. And that was coming back to me watching that game yesterday, that the changes made... I mean, he might turn around and say the players, but the changes made zero impact on the on the way that game was going. Nothing changed that game. And that's what I was asking about substitutions. Obviously, one was forced upon him in terms of Lustig going off and Toyang coming on.
And I remember Sinclair coming on for Johnston and then Encham coming on, what, after about 70-odd minutes, 75 minutes?
And
then it was obviously too late. Mm-hmm. Sinclair for Johnston won, it's kind of illogical as well, though, right? Like, we were, I think, 2-0 down at that point, is that right?
Yep.
And possibly, although Sinclair hasn't had a good last 2 months, you're hoping that, you know, he comes, he's got 25 minutes and maybe he just has an inspired 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's so kind of individualistic in a way that he could just go on one of those runs where he just takes out two or three people and everything.
The type of play that Edward, the type of run Edward actually did for setting up Burton.
Yeah, completely. And so that's, I don't really have any problem with that. I do kind of, I'm all over the place with this podcast, kind of going back and forth and different things, but it does seem weird, right, to throw in Johnston into that game. And I like Johnson, like, spoken about this quite a few times. I really like him. But he hasn't played for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Literally hasn't played for us for 2 months. And in my view, he should have been coming on for, you know, 20 minutes. If we're two goals up or whatever, you know, give him and Henderson some more minutes.
We've not been two experience. Goals up since Lennon came, apart from Aberdeen.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You're just killing my points here.
But that's part of the problem. That's been part of the problem.
Aye. No Johnston or Henderson, otherwise we would have been. It seemed too much to do that. And basically they did that as well at Ibrox. Although he had been playing, prior to the Ibrox game, he had been playing.
He played three or four games in a row or something like that.
Yeah, and he scored three goals in about in two games, back to back. But then to put him as the number nine, the lone striker at Ibrox, I don't think he did that badly, actually. Looking back on it, like, when I actually looked at the video footage, he actually retained the ball, I think, every single time apart from twice, something like that. And he was just linking, like, about, say, 9 out of 11 times, he was just linking up play. Not that we really did anything. Like, there wasn't really much threat, but his actual play to receive it and to give it was actually fine if you look back at the video footage. Anyway, to do that this time when he hasn't played for 2 months, it's kind of, come on.
But that's, so one of the things, and this is going to sound like a Lennon assassination here, but it's not, because I'm going to say something later in defence of Lennon, that someone who wants Lennon to get the job talked me through, and every point the guy made is valid. But if we are saying that Brendan Rodgers made a difference to players,
mm-hmm.
and they progressed, then it's not unreasonable that when Brendan Rodgers is gone, some players will regress. Now, we had some issues with the way we were playing, but see, after six games this season, we were on 6 points. So we dropped 12 out of the first 18 points this season. But we were starting to play better, and certainly from the new year under Brendan Rodgers, we were scoring goals and playing well. And one of the keys to that was suddenly Scott Sinclair was playing like Scott Sinclair had in his first season.
Mm-hmm.
And he's obviously a confidence person, and he was scoring goals. That's what makes Scott Sinclair doesn't always contribute massively to the game, but he can score goals when he's playing well. And since Lennon's arrived, he has turned into the crap Scott Sinclair. And lots of people are criticising Burke, and understand. But see, after two or three games under Brendan Rodgers, I actually thought, I don't know if he'll be able to turn them into the player that, but I can see the player that Brendan's trying to create out of this guy. He's tall. He's got physicality. He's got pace. And that, and you know, I'm not saying he's Dembele, but Dembele-esque in terms of that. A guy that you can play through the middle, who's a bit more physical, but he's not a, you know, John Marston type guy, physical guy through the middle, and he's got a bit of pace. And I thought that's what Brendan's trying to do to him. And then since Brendan's gone and Neil Lennon's come in, he has regressed back to a really shy guy with a touch worse than Chris Gomez.
To go to your initial point about the improvement, and then it's illogical to then kind of regress again. That's essentially what makes a great coach.
Yep.
That you can analyse your players and then give very strict instructions to kind of utilise the best aspects of that play and minimise their weak points. So like McGregor, he's very good at receiving the ball under pressure. He's a very good touch in like tight spaces, people like pressing him, and he can hold the ball and give the ball, and he just kind of knits the play together. And then Celtic get kind of structured, kind of controlled possession, just because he's just kind of dropping back into little pockets of space and just kind of giving simple balls and whatever. But it's just helping the whole team kind of have control possession. Now, like, if you think about, like, Klopp, like, Wijnaldum. Wijnaldum's been one of the best players for them this season. He isn't especially incredible. He was quite a good player at Newcastle. He was a pretty good player at PSV. And then the other night, he's scoring 2 goals against Barcelona and has been very good all season. And it's like, and you can kind of say the same about Henderson, who, again, he's a good player, but he's not a great player. But Klopp obviously kind of understands exactly what they have to do and minimises. Like, he doesn't want Henderson kind of threading through balls. No, Henderson.
Oh, Henderson, yeah, sorry, yeah.
Henderson.
Like and Paul Lambert goes to Dortmund.
And
turns into this fantastic midfield player. Because in Scotland, the midfield player has to do everything. He has to be box to box, he has to score goals, and he has to do that. Whereas he goes to Germany and they say, right, okay, do you know what you're going to do? You're just going to be what Callum McGregor currently is for Celtic. Just move it around.
Yeah. Completely. And you kind of see that, like, Rogic in that kind of, I don't even think it's a kind of now dipping form, or that he's kind of coming back from injury or whatever. That's it to an extent. But I also think in that style of football, Rogic, even when he's fully fit, won't be that influential. Like, Riquelme wouldn't be that influential in a, you know, shuttling back and forth in a 4-4-2, box to box. It would just bypass him. And so, like, Rodgers kind of playing through the phases, slower passing or whatever that people are starting to criticise, that's why those specific players were so good for us, because they have the touch in tight situations under pressure. And that's another thing why I kind of feel sorry for Lennon, is that he doesn't, as I was saying before, he doesn't have the, you know, number nine who's going to attack cross balls.
Yeah.
And he wants to go down a line and put cross balls into who? So it's kind of, under a proper Lennon team, I think we would be better than we currently are with, say, 4 signings that he would pick. Or that, you know, his guys would pick for him or whatever.
So the guy, someone that I know who wants Lennon to get the job, likes Lennon as a person, he keeps making the following points to me, which they are all valid, right? Which are, they're not Lennon's players, for a start. Lennon has come in, and this is a team that's won 8 out of 8 trophies. Mm-hmm. And his job has been to get them over the line in 13, 16 games, whatever it is. That's his job. So from as a consequence, Lennon himself doesn't feel he can't go in and radically change it. Because you try to do that,
yeah,
and
yeah,
things go wrong while the players are adjusting and you've blown everything. So he's trying to come in and just keep them going the way they've been going. But the challenge, mm-hmm, of doing that is, no matter who you are,
mm-hmm,
you will have a slightly different football philosophy. Even if everybody thinks they're similar football philosophies, like Brendan to Klopp, for example, you're going to be slightly different and want the players to do slightly different things. So it's really difficult for you to go into a training pitch and get people to do what somebody else would want them to do. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bit like a stepdad. He's going in and he doesn't feel like he can really give the players into trouble.
Yeah.
Because they'll just chuck the rattle out of the pram because he's not been permanently appointed. So he doesn't feel like he can be himself. Then you've got the added element in all of that of you've then got six or seven players who don't know if they're going to be there. The players don't know if the guy who's currently there is judging them or not judging them because they don't know if he's going to be there. And Brendan has overworked and overtrained those players in the last nearly 3 years. And that's why someone like Callum McGregor, with his 60-odd games this season, is burnt out. And that's why Kieran Tierney has hardly played a game in Lennon's time in charge, because basically Kieran Tierney needs to be not playing football and getting an operation.
Uh-huh.
So all of those things together, the person, and then the ultimate thing is, they're not Lennon's players playing that he would necessarily have for the style of football he would want. So all of those things together, the person saying, you can't really judge Lennon on this. All Lennon's got to do is just get him to win the league and win the cup. And the style doesn't really matter, because with all of that chucked in, it's virtually impossible to have a style to it.
Yeah.
And
I agree with that. And I agree with that, and I also think he shouldn't be the long-term manager.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to be completely reasonable and kind of with, you know, what he's done.
Yeah.
And, but at the same time, long-term, I would want something different. But this has been successful. Even if we don't win the cup, just to win this league and just to keep everything going. And I know he had a big advantage and whatever, but just to keep it going. Obviously, we want to win a cup, but, you know.
Yeah.
Much more important, winning this league and keeping the run going. And then we can, you know, reinvest, change the squad for next season and kind of go in a different direction.
So, you and I have had a lot of messages backwards and forth about the issue currently in relation to the manager and why, because we both agree on the same principle, why the issue is not as much about the manager. Actually, the issue is about the structure of everything at the club, from recruitment through to, mm-hmm, who picks the manager and how all that knits together. So do you want to sort of explain what you think would be a setup that would then facilitate, which then stop our irritation at the moment, where everything seems to be frozen because you can't make any decision, because who knows if Lennon's going to be the manager or not, and how can you make decisions on players? Meanwhile, the clock's ticking away and we are, we must be like 10 weeks away from Champions League qualifiers or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you want to talk through that?
Well, I think that, so like we've spoken about this before, more or less, about similar clubs around Europe.
Yeah.
That similar revenue, what our revenue was 103 million,
uh-huh,
in the last annual report, which is higher than Porto, Ajax, Anderlecht, Basel, Sporting, blah, blah, blah. Of all of these clubs, the ones that are successful are the ones that manage to have a transfer balance where they're making 100% profit.
Mm-hmm.
So even at 100 million revenue, if we just buy and sell at the same level and never get more capital, we can't properly challenge. And we'll never challenge. Mm-hmm. Like, it's basically impossible with that budget to be challenging the elite year in, year out.
Yeah.
The only way clubs like Ajax, Celtic, Anderlecht, whatever, can do it is by successively having about 100% transfer profit. And year on year, almost like compound interest, when you're reinvesting in ever-increasing circles.
Yeah.
And then selling again at a higher level, reinvesting at a higher level, selling again at a higher level. After 5-6 years, you begin to amass a lot of capital. Now, that doesn't show in the annual reports. When it says revenue, it excludes all transfer activity. Yeah. But for instance, Benfica, who've been doing this, have in the last 10 years have amassed 350 million, in fact more than 350 million pounds worth of profit. Porto are just under that, they're something like 335 or 340 million in that 10 years. Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly, Salzburg haven't, they've only just been doing it recently. Uh-huh. But over that same span, so they're kind of, the amounts that they're spending haven't got to that stage yet. Mm-hmm. But their transfer profit is 170%. That's just, that's in a small league that no one would apparently want to go to. Mm-hmm. That isn't spending even that much money.
Yeah.
That's just having people in markets that will give them profit.
You mean they don't take loan players from Man City and PSG?
And Ajax are doing the same. Mm-hmm. Basel are doing the same. Now, if you look at the 10-year coefficient, Ajax are 20th in Europe. 21st in Europe. Basel are 23rd in Europe. Porto in the last 10 years, 8th in Europe. Mm-hmm. Benfica, 10th in Europe. They shouldn't be competing at that level. Mm-hmm. Basel have something like a revenue of something like 50 million a year. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be anywhere near that level. But they're intelligently kind of buying and selling. And so their mass, especially Benfica and Porto, because they've been doing it for more than 10 years. They've been doing it for 15 years or whatever. And now they've amassed a lot of money, so they can quite comfortably spend 8, 9, 10 million pounds on a player. Mm-hmm. And so, unless we fix that, mm-hmm. for the record, ours in the last 10 years has been 28%, as opposed to Salzburg, 170. The amount we've made, as opposed to Benfica in the last 10 years of 350 million, ours has been something like 27 million profit. So when Benfica reinvest and Porto reinvest and Ajax now reinvest, they're reinvesting with that money. Mm-hmm. And we're reinvesting in getting a £2 million player, a free transfer, another free transfer, and a £3 million player. And they're going, okay, I'll pick that guy, the best kid from Red Star Belgrade, who's the next star, whatever, 10 million. I'll get a guy from Portugal, I'll get him. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, they've been selling, you know, big players to big clubs.
So it's the principle. I had a mate who used to make a lot, who used to make money every year from the bookies.
Yeah.
If he went to the casino, he would invariably leave up. And his attitude was, the very, you know, the first time he was gambling, he was prepared to lose, say, 100 quid, right? But he wouldn't. He would maybe mm-hmm. make 120 quid.
Mm-hmm.
See, from that point on, he would only ever gamble the profit. The mm-hmm. 100 million is part, and he would, and that's why he made money. Because if he didn't then go chasing a bad hand, if he lost a hand, once he got dropped down to that initial 100 quid that he'd gone in with,
yeah.
If he got to a point in the night where he only had 100 million, he would leave the night, right?
Yeah.
It's the same. basic principle of once you've got that sub, and of course the reason he was up is because he was then starting to gamble money, free money effectively. It was, he was gambling because it was all profit. I mean, I wrote a piece on our site 6-7 years ago about the same point.
Was this friend you, by the way? Yes.
That's why I drive an Aston Martin. Not. And the piece I wrote on the site was, we seem to have a transfer. We seem to have a transfer strategy for the sake of having a transfer strategy. That we were buying players and then selling them and moving them on for no reason other than that's what we did. Rather than, my perception was, we start in the, we shop at the £1 to £3 million player, and then after two or three seasons, and then we sell some of them. After two or three seasons, we are shopping in the £3 to £6 million bracket and sell some of them. After two or three seasons, we're shopping in the £6 to £10 million bracket, because we're continually buying. You'll kiss the odd frog. You'll buy the odd guy who's not going to do it.
Yeah.
But so that then, we're not.
But then, just even to slightly interject at that point, sorry. Mm-hmm. Even then, some gamblers are better than others. Mm-hmm. If you go to a market that has, say, 200% resale value on every player that's been sold from that market in the last 10 years. Or you go to another market that doesn't have anything like that. Mm-hmm. Well, every signing is a gamble.
Yeah.
But some gambles are better than others.
Right. So, we've talked, you and I, many times in the podcast about that side of it. So how do we get the structure of the club right to make sure that's right? And to have, well, and to be able to then have managers, because obviously we bought Dembele and made a big profit on him. We're probably going to make a big profit on Ncham, who I think wants away. But due to our choice of manager and wanting to, and slightly being enthralled to the decision making of that manager, we didn't sell Gordon for £4 million at 35, 36 years of age. We didn't sell Boyata for £10 million and now he's walked out the door for nothing. We didn't sell Simonovic for £8 million, and you know, the last few weeks he's looked closer to being that level of player, but he needs to do that for a whole season to then get back to your £8 million level, because the manager didn't want to. So what's the structure you need to be in place to stop just that, you know, we get a manager in who says, you know what, I don't like that strategy?
Yeah, well, I think you have to have that structure in place and the director of football in place and a kind of completely agreed parameters for when you hire that manager. Mm-hmm. That, and let's be honest, most large European clubs, like, you know, that aren't in the Big Five, and even those in the Big Five as well, to be honest. But Ajax, Benfica, whatever. A manager, the next Ajax manager, isn't going in, getting his own director of football, buying players from the league he's just been in. Because they have a business plan that's successful, mm-hmm. is making them a lot of money, and is beneficial.
Yep.
Because it's providing them with the capital to then, when they buy Davinson Sanchez for £5 million, sell him for £40 million, then they can, with that money, then buy Neres, Tadic and Blint. Mm-hmm. Okay, Blint and Tadic are kind of a bit older, and maybe they could get money for Tadic and make a profit and whatever, but you know, it seems as though they want two older players there to kind of guide through the team. But Neres, the Brazilian boy, he'll be off. Uh-huh. And he'll be off for 30, 40, 50 million from the 10 that they spent on him. Mm-hmm. And it continues. So we, when we appoint a manager, well, I think I wrote the other day that for me, the appointment of a director of football is as important as the appointment of a manager, because it maybe wouldn't be if you already had that system in place. Mm-hmm. But without that system in place, we're just plateauing.
Yeah.
And we're never going to compete. Like, all Celtic fans, our goal should be to be where Ajax are now. Mm-hmm. And where Porto could have been this season, but they got knocked out in, what, the quarters or something?
Yeah.
And it's not impossible.
No,
it's incredibly difficult, but it's not impossible.
I mean, as a first objective, we should be looking to be, for me, last 16 of Europa League level. That's the first stage we should be aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
Last 16 or playing in the last 16 in Champions League, because you've actually slightly overachieved and you didn't finish third in Europa League in your Champions
League. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Our first aim should be, we should be qualifying for the Champions League. Now, that may change in a couple of years, but we should be qualifying for the Champions League and looking to finish third and get to through the first 32, through the last 32 stage into the last 16 stage Europa League. And mm-hmm. when we overachieve, we actually drop into the last 16 in the Champions League because we finish second. That would be an overachievement.
Mm-hmm.
And when we underachieve, because we've maybe just had a really shitty draw in the group, we finish fourth in the group, mm-hmm. right? But that should be our base level of what our aspiration is.
And yeah.
Upwards from there.
When you're, yeah, that should be the baseline. When you have a wage budget of, say, I don't know what it is this season, previous season it was 59 million, mm-hmm. this season, I don't know. 52, something like that.
It'll be between 50 and 60, something like that. It's 50 to 60 million quid.
That should qualify. In this format of the Champions League qualifiers, that should qualify.
Yeah.
But yeah, we can talk about kind of hypotheticals and whatever, about a good draw, bad draw, whatever. The first thing is, you need that structure and you need that policy from the club. And you need the strength from the club to sell Boyata at 10 million when he isn't going to renew his contract. And you also need the recruitment in place that doesn't really change from manager to manager. Mm-hmm. That you identify the markets that are providing elite young players and that are affordable for us.
Hey, so,
and then you have a kind of, we're selling Boyata because we've got Serbia's next big centre-back coming in. Mm-hmm. Or Poland, whatever. And you just keep it churning over. And you keep on making profit, increasing your capital. Until, you know, Ajax won't do this, you know, every year. Mm-hmm. But they might do it once every 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying even, you know, getting to a semi-final. But they might be a very competitive club in the quarters that no one really wants to play.
As opposed in a way to, that, for us, maybe once every 30 years at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much your track record.
Yeah. In a way that Porto, who have, even with all of their success, still have a lower revenue than us. And Porto just regularly are in the quarterfinals. Even when they don't have an especially good team like this year, mm-hmm. they're in the quarterfinals.
So, I'm going to go through, because I 100% agree with you, and I'm going to go through a wee bit more, and then I'm going to chuck in some devil's advocate, some Lawrence Donegan type questions. I'll not tell Lawrence the face you're pulling there. So
there was no face there at all.
So, right, so for me, what the technical director, director of football, sporting director, whatever terminology he's got, in some ways, right now, in this type of situation we're in right now, would be the most important person at the club. right this minute. Because, for me, that's the guy who is the continuity through everything. He's going to be there. Modern managers, I mean, we've seen, and I'll get on to the type of manager that I think we can recruit, but we've seen more elite managers like Brendan Rodgers and Martin O'Neill starting to get fed up being in Scotland. It's a bit boring going to Hamilton four times a season, right?
Yeah.
So that type of manager is going to want to be at Celtic for 2-3 years top. But even someone who's more domestic orientated and Celtic orientated, like Neil Lennon and Gordon Strachan, both wanted to be out in the modern football world after 4 years. Mm-hmm. So if you then have a system where your managers are going to come and go every 2 to 4 years, then you absolutely need to have a continuity process in place.
Completely.
So you have a technical director, director of football, sporting director, is a guy who knows the club, knows the ethos of the way the club is going to be. That's, you know, from my perspective, someone who understands Celtic's going to always have a certain style of football. We are going to be a front foot attacking, you know, we can't play like Rangers, whose greatest players are defender. Our greatest players are attacking players, flair players. So we've got to be a front foot attacking dynamic style. That's the ethos of the club. A bit like Ajax with their permanent 4-3-3 ethos. That guy's, for me, that guy's in charge of the head guy for recruitment, head of the ultimate person in charge of recruitment. There will always be sub-managers below him. Recruitment and the academy, and plays a major role in deciding who the manager is. Now, I say major role because I'm conscious of the fact that that Peter Lowell in our structure is not suddenly going to become a bean counter and do nothing else, right? So Peter Lowell's still going to have a major say in stuff. So whether it's then the technical director's part of a committee that chooses stuff or whatever, but anyway, he has a major say in the manager. That doesn't then preclude you getting in a manager of the stature of Brendan Rodgers, who still interacts directly with Peter Lowell and Dermot Desmond. It just means that when he sits down for the interview, part of the interview and the discussions involves the technical director, and part of it is mapping out, this is our strategy, and whilst there's flexibility that we're not completely rigid on the plan, pretty much Boyata's getting sold for £10 million.
Yeah, completely.
Conversation happens with him. But he would have more confidence in that conversation happening, and this is where we continually have the issue. If your recruitment system's then got to be perfect, because it doesn't matter that you sold Boyata, because as you pointed out, the previous summer's transfer window, you signed the number one Serbian centre-half, who is already coming through the system and has already played a number of games for you last season after you signed him, because you knew he was going to replace Boyata. Almost to some extent.
Talking of which, Partizan Belgrade have a 17-year-old who's starting every game called Pavlicic. Have a look at him.
Okay. And
not specifically you.
I know. I appreciate you. Everybody else, you see, the benefit is I can't do this. Everybody else is now going, so how do you spell that? How do you spell Pavlicic?
I don't even know.
And put it in a YouTube to try and see him. But equally, the technical directors also, from my perspective, having regular meetings with the manager to remind him of his obligations to try and get those academy players playing first team football. Because why aren't our academy why are our academy players, either our academy is utterly shit, or there's some reason why our academy players are not getting to the first team, or it's a mixture of both. And that then also means having the very best coaches that we can afford in our academy system. Doing somebody a favour because, you know, a bit disappointed we let Sean Maloney go, for example. So, the other aspect for me is we've talked before about how 15, 20 years ago, Tier 1 players played for Man United and Barcelona and Real Madrid. But tier two players were, we could get them because mm-hmm. the tier two players option was playing on, being on the bench for Man United on 20 grand a week or playing for Celtic at 20 grand a week.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, tier ones are on hundreds of thousands a week. Tier twos are on 100 grand a week. Tier threes are on 80 grand a week. Tier fours, it's tier four and five.
Yeah,
but that's the way we're at, right? So we kind of get the elite players.
Uh-huh.
But actually, we can get much closer to affording the elite managers. We can get tier two level. Brendan Rodgers, right? Basic salary, 1.8 million quid. After all these bonuses and everything last season, he got 4 million quid.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the top 10 paid managers in the UK. Right? So that then demonstrates to me, so Brendan Rodgers, okay, unique circumstances because despite everything, he has a Celtic affiliation and whatever. But it does demonstrate we can go for, we're at tier 6 level of player, but we can be on tier 2 level of manager.
Yeah.
And all of those managers, when they're in Germany and France and Italy and Spain or wherever, or Austria,
mm-hmm.
they're under the system of a technical director.
Yeah.
They're in that they're used to that structure. So you're not asking a British manager who, no, because when I'm here, I'm in charge type person. You're getting it. So
yeah.
Those are all the reasons.
And even in England now, yeah. You're getting that.
So those are all the reasons why, for me, that structure is a 21st century structure, taking into account that player trading for our level of clubs is really important, so it cannot stop. I did a calculation when you were speaking. 8 weeks tomorrow night,
mm-hmm.
is if we are drawn to play on a Tuesday, it's 8 weeks tomorrow night as we record this, is our first okay. Champions League game. We can't be frozen, waiting. Everything's got to carry on. And if managers are in and out for 2 to 4 years and player trading is really important, then you've got to have that structure in place to be able to have the continuity of dropping in. And the reason why the technical director is really important gets back to the conversation we just had about Lennon and you saying Lennon's team's 4 players short of being able to play mm-hmm. the Lennon system. Well, if you have the proper technical director, then the manager that you get next time is a manager who plays roughly in the style that you want him to play, and so you're not having to chuck all the players out the door because they're not they don't fit with the manager.
Yep.
So the downside of all of that is we just can't get those people to come to Glasgow because Scottish football's shit. No, I'm just saying the counter argument, and we also can't sell at the level of profit that the likes of Porto and Salzburg and Anderlecht are selling at, because people just won't pay that money for a player from Scotland. So what's your counter to that?
My counter to that would be that, say, regarding Porto, they're not paying £30 million for their centre-back because he did well against Maritimo, Boa Vista and Vitória Guimarães or whatever. They're doing it because in the last 10 years they've been the 8th best team in Europe, which means for the last 10 years their players have been beating Arsenal, drawing with Dortmund, beating Lyon, getting knocked out by Real Madrid. And when their players are playing better than their opponents that have cost 30-40 million, and they have one standout player, then it's quite obvious the quality of that player. Now, we perhaps undersold Van Dijk, undersold Dembele.
Well, I'm convinced we undersold Dembele now.
But, yeah, kind of. But for a scout for a major team, Van Dijk had a decent year in Europe the first year. And then in the second year, in the major game we played, which was Inter Milan away, he gets sent off in the first half or early on in the second. That's when everyone, all the scouts, all the clubs around Europe who've been interested in this young boy at Celtic, who's ripping up at Celtic, they tuned in for that game. Mm-hmm. That's when they're assessing Van Dijk. And that's when they assess the Porto players.
Yep.
Not against a Portuguese town of about 10,000 people with 5,000 people in the stadium. Mm-hmm. And Porto win 4-0. That's irrelevant.
Yep.
It matters when they go away to Dortmund. And then when they beat Dortmund, it's like, okay, yep, we were right. That kid is good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do you think there's any chance of us going down that route?
Yeah, eventually. Eventually, because it's illogical. When our competitors that have smaller revenue are doing it and are making huge amounts of money, then it's kind of illogical at one point that someone says, hey, we should be doing this and we should be kind of strong about doing this. Mm-hmm. We should be implementing it very strictly. We were kind of on the way, because previously we used to always kind of just buy from England.
Yeah.
But England and, you know, the occasional Scandinavian or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, so for instance, we, in the last, say, what, 7-8 years or something, we bought 3 players from Holland and Belgium. Mm-hmm. We spent 7 million, mm-hmm. got 20-odd million back, mm-hmm. near 30, from the 7 million outlay. Mm-hmm. And never went back. Now, that's one of the markets that is providing a lot of high resale for loads of clubs. Mm-hmm. So maybe that should be one of the priority markets. Mm-hmm. Maybe another one should be the Balkans, mm-hmm. and et cetera, et cetera. And you have, say, 5-6 priority markets that are continually producing good players that are affordable for us, and that's where you invest your limited budget, because it grows your budget.
So, I mean, I suppose it's always a possibility. The only thing I would say about the possibility that we are considering another untapped market is Kouassi, who we signed for £3.5 million from the Russian market, and then mm-hmm. Shved, who mm-hmm. we've signed. So there is an indication that we are at least looking at another mm-hmm. that market, and maybe a different manager will get a different result out of Kouassi as a player. You know, he's injured at the moment.
You know, Brent possibly
seemed to pretty quickly decide he wasn't for him. Maybe another manager will get something out of him.
Weirdly, I spoke to Kouassi's brother. I was at the even weirder, it was in a bar. No, it was in a cafe in Athens at about 2 o'clock in the morning. So I went to my brother and I.
How much did you drink at this point?
Yeah. Well, not that much, because I'd just been to the game.
I'm
but my brother and I.
But you're white.
Yeah.
I know, but I'm still classy for.
Yeah. Yeah. He still has to give me my wallet back. No, my brother and I went to Athens. I was back home over the summer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because we met.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then, because it's one of the few times I'm back, I said to my brother, okay, we have to go to Athens. So we went over there, met him, very nice guy. Mm-hmm. But he was kind of saying, both of them, him and Kouassi, seemed to understand that he wasn't really wanted. Mm-hmm. But because the McGinn deal fell through, that he was going to be kept in the squad.
Right.
Otherwise, he would have been loaned out, and that's what they wanted.
Because, much as we signed him for 3.5 million quid, he's still a youngster that needed games.
Yeah.
You know, it's always going about the thing that really really, you know, there's the benefit of doing this podcast is very occasionally you speak to people that will just give you one bit of nugget of information. And it was when I did the podcast with Stan Petrov, and he said the turning point in his career as a professional footballer was Kenny Dalglish saying, "You're playing the next 10 games no matter what."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he just transformed from there. And, you know, maybe somebody needs to have said to Kouassi, "You're playing the next 10 games no matter what."
There's two kind of points in my head about that. Is that the resale, now I think markets, the market you buy from is very important, mm-hmm. but also squad management is really important. And if there's a finite amount of minutes for the players, mm-hmm. and if you have too many players in one position,
yeah.
then obviously there's a kind of surplus of players and they won't get minutes and their value depreciates.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you bring in Kouassi and there's five, you know, defensive midfielders or players who can play defensive midfield ahead of him, then it's unlikely that he'll play and it's unlikely that he'll increase in profit, in value. And the squad management, it's been an issue for under the last three or four managers,
mm-hmm.
that there's been quotes at the start of every season from Rodgers 3 years in a row saying we need to trim the squad.
Yeah.
And this squad had 35, 36 Somewhere. Players, and it was supplemented by five loans that were first team kind of pick loans. So then it's unlikely that your guy is going to increase in value. Like, there was a situation, I think about, when was that, about 2012 to 2014, or 2012 to 2016, when Celtic had 20 strikers, centre-forwards, not kind of, you know, wide players,
yeah.
centre-forwards, over four seasons. Now, Skekovic is unlikely to increase in value when there's, what, five, six strikers in that squad ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in, you see him once every 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that aspect of the club, which is kind of conversations between the director of football and the manager, I would guess. But that kind of needs to be tighter as well.
So you said you'd have a sympathy with Lennon and agreed with the comments that the guy I know who likes Lennon,
mm-hmm.
but you don't want him as manager.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you want as manager?
My kind of ideal picks won't come,
mm-hmm.
but I would want to be in contact with Xavi. He's retired. He's openly stated that he wants to become a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And watching interviews in Spanish with him and reading any article that comes out about him, he's more Cruyff than Cruyff. He's more Guardiola than Guardiola. That's the style of football that he's going to be playing. And you can see it in... But for me, he's the best midfielder that's ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about the best Spain team and the best Barcelona team, he was the key to the very best of both,
mm-hmm.
in that kind of, say, 3, 4, 5 year period. He was running both teams. I don't think it's a case where sometimes you get players, you know, even a midfielder like Gerrard,
mm-hmm.
who you watch Gerrard, and I wouldn't have automatically thought that there's a guy who really understands the game, because it seemed to be that it was Xabi Alonso and Mascherano that were kind of controlling that Liverpool team, and Gerrard was let loose,
mm-hmm.
and very talented, exceptional player. Physicality, drive, great shot, blah blah blah. but in understanding how to control a game, mm-hmm. it seemed to be that Xavi Alonso and Mascherano were doing it. Okay, so Xavi understands how to control a game. Mm-hmm. He understands football. So I don't think there's even that case of, ah, he's a great player, but he won't make a great manager. No. He understands football better than anyone that I can think of, because he controlled the best Barcelona team.
The argument would be, though, you have no track record, and that's a massive risk to take, going for 10 in a row.
Yeah, I would kind of accept that point. I'd also say that in interviews with him, he seems to be exceptionally intelligent. And it's difficult. It's always difficult to... He has no managerial record, so it's always difficult to kind of predict
yeah.
how someone's going to do. But for his intelligence, the style of play, and also perhaps influencing our academy. So, as you say, he would only be there for, what, 2-3 years?
Yeah.
And the project that I would hope that Celtic would kind of present to him is that we understand that you're going to be Barcelona manager. Mm-hmm. And that you could probably walk in to be, when the next guy goes, you could probably become Barcelona manager. But it would be better for your development as a manager if you come to us and you go to Barcelona with 3 campaigns in Europe and winning 3 leagues with Celtic. Mm-hmm. And his influence on the academy as well, I think, would be important. And you touched on it before, about 10 minutes ago, about having the best coaches for the academy. Him looking at the standards throughout the club, having been at the very best mm-hmm. for 15 years, and he'll be able to pinpoint where we are lacking in quality and where we can improve, whether that's academy coaching, drills, whatever, to kind of up the level in a way that Rodgers, with his experience at Liverpool, mm-hmm. comes in and he sees, okay, this needs to change, and it ups the level.
I mean,
I don't even think we would get him, but that would be my kind of ideal.
So if you couldn't get him, if you get anybody else, or
another thing that's completely kind of contradictory, well, it's not completely contradictory, but it's on a different kind of scale, is thinking, I personally think, kind of like what you were saying about, we can only afford, say, 5 or 6 tier players, but we can afford a top manager.
Yep.
It's kind of looking at the quality of managers and kind of almost finding a loophole in how you can attract an incredible manager. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it's looking at the people who are kind of past it or retired.
Yep.
That saying to someone like Marcello Lippi, who's that kind of Hitzfeld.
Yeah.
Like, Hitzfeld, who's won, what, 2-3 European Cups, did well with Switzerland as well. He's been retired for a couple of years. He's, what, 70? Mm-hmm. It's not that old.
Yeah.
So those would be they're completely different options.
No, but I understand, going for Xavi, but actually, the benefit of somebody like Wenger would be, I'm picking Wenger only because somebody suggested that to me earlier today, would be, right, it's only for 2 years, but the reason why we're needing you is because we're actually bringing in a brand new system where, because it's the name that's been mentioned, John Kennedy's becoming technical director.
Mm-hmm.
And we're bringing Sean Maloney back to be working as number two in ahead of the academy, number two to the technical director on that side of things. And this is what we're doing on the scouting side. And so we're actually, these are all guys who understand the ethos of Celtic, but they're young guys. So the reason we want you in for just the next 2 to 3 years is because we need somebody who's been there and done that everywhere to help them, so that,
yeah.
Because I think it, you know, if you went down that route and you went down the John Kennedy, and as I say, I'm only picking him because his name has been mentioned and I've met him. He seems very articulate, very intelligent, and I know he's very well respected in the club. If you went down that route, you do have a very young and inexperienced technical side of things. If you then bring in a young and inexperienced coach, everybody's young and inexperienced.
Yeah.
And that would be the benefit of your Hitzfeld type person. Chris Hooton got the sack from Brighton today.
Yeah, but that's
what Minkley's kind of mentioned to him on Radio Scotland tonight, apparently.
But that's kind of exactly what I... My thinking is, why do you get someone who's kind of in vogue and whatever, but kind of operates at that level, when there's a lot of guys who were the best managers in Europe 8-10 years ago, and you know, maybe they wouldn't take a job or whatever, but why wouldn't you ask them before you ask someone who's a kind of manager in a championship, who's had a good season in the English second tier, when there's a guy who's got 3 European Cups, who may be bored, might think, I would actually love to be with Celtic in the Champions League for 2 years. And not even specifically Hitzfeld, he's just an example, but of that kind of...
I know what you mean, yeah.
Like how Bayern brought back Heynckes.
I was going to say, the type of guy who, every so often, you know, at a World Cup, a team overperforms. And it's not even the guy of the Hitzfeld level, it's just a guy who has been around at a very good level of European football and just knows how to get a team performing on that stage.
Yeah. Like, who's the Dutch guy who got Holland to the South African World Cup? Is it Van Marwijk or something like that? There's so many, you know, high-level coaches. And coaches have kind of achieved something, but aren't in a kind of the UK kind of bubble. Like, you know, probably someone like Pulis would want 4 times the wages of someone who's, you know, been working at Champions League level, but doesn't currently have a job. I saw, who is it? Someone mentioned Koku as well, who hasn't been operating at that level, but does have two Dutch titles with PSV. Yeah,
failed at Fenerbahce, but you don't know whether that was the circumstances of Fenerbahce at the time. You know, it's like, again, the guy I know who wants Neil Lennon, very much a careful what you wish for type thing. It seems that Celtic fans just want a guy, you know, like the Sam Allardyce comment of, if my name was Sam Allardyce, I'd have been more sought after type thing. And, you know, he's talking about Paul Le Guin going to Rangers, right? And saying he was the most sought after coach in Europe. And he failed, he bombed, and since then he's been useless. But my counter to that would be, but did Rangers do their homework? Because either there was rumours that Rangers were going for Le Guin, or they'd already agreed. I think they might have already agreed to take Le Guin. I went on a skiing holiday, right? And the skiing coach...
Did you drive down in the Aston Martin?
I did. I drove down the Aston Martin. I was wearing a black polo neck jumper, and I was very James Bond look.
Just down to Monte Carlo with your gambling winnings.
Exactly. And my skiing coach was a Lyon fan. And I said to him, you know, what do you think of Paul Le Guin? And he said, Lyon's like the best Formula One car. You can pick any Formula One driver and stick him in that car and he'll win the race. the guys, and that sort of proved the point. There was a period where it didn't matter who was in charge of Lyon. Lyon won the French league.
Yeah.
And for me, that was then, actually, although Le Guin was the guy that everyone across Europe was talking about, if I spoke to just a skiing instructor who's a Lyon fan who makes that comment, then how much research did David Murray do? And based on the track record, probably none. He probably just thought, I can blow a wad of cash on this guy and look, you know, Johnny Big Balls. That's the, that, you know, that would be my counter to, oh, be careful what you wish for, and look at the Paul Le Guin example. Well, the counter to that is, did Rangers actually do their homework in Paul Le Guin and get the same feedback off people? You can, so, would Koku's failure at Fenerbahce be because actually Fenerbahce was a Bangkok club at the time, and it didn't matter who'd have gone in?
Yeah.
Pep could have gone in and lost games.
Yeah. I would just want some sort of process. Like, you can argue back and forth on, like, a specific candidate, and that's completely normal and completely kind of acceptable. But I do hope we're kind of going in there with an open mind and kind of analysing and kind of being quite broad-minded about it.
Well, we are 8 weeks away, right, from Champions League football. We're not going to make a change before Saturday, right? So this time next week, we're 7 weeks away. We're not going to make a change before the cup final, which means, at the earliest, if we are secretly talking to someone right now, we are making the change of a new manager 6 weeks before the Champions League qualifier start. Now, we should be able to get through the first one. Yeah, that was Brendan almost blew it against the Gibraltar team, but, you know, we should be able to get through the first one. But that's still, by the time we get a new manager in, 7-8 weeks before we're starting to play teams that at current level will start to be a challenge for us. And we're not ready.
Maybe they've got someone lined up.
Well, so we've spoken to Mourinho twice. We've spoken to Benitez twice. Now of those people, particularly Benitez more than Mourinho, fits with what you just talked about. Although Mourinho, actually, with your second version, so he's not the same age, but the principle of a guy who's been around Europe and done that and might want something to change things, I very much doubt it, and I doubt he would come. And, you know, we might have spoken to him twice, but for all we know, he's spoken to 20 other clubs twice and three times, you know. You don't know. The fact that I know that there is some truth to those rumours at least gives me heart that somebody at Celtic has the same aspiration for a
team,
for that level of manager that we do.
I quite like that ambition. And previously to bring in Rodgers as well, and even if you go back to O'Neill, I like that ambition to go for. I think Celtic fans should be demanding, and sometimes I don't think we're demanding enough.
I think at the moment in particular, I mean, I remember having a debate with some guys on Twitter. It wasn't even I don't even know how it started into a debate where somebody asked the question of, I would much rather win 10 in a row than have European success. My immediate response was, why has it got to be either or? The guy then was very strong on, all we need to focus on is winning the next two leagues and beating Rangers. My counter to that was, if our goal is to finish 1 point ahead of Rangers, we, and as a consequence, don't do well in Europe, we can make £10 million more than them by the time you finish them. If our goal is to play Champions League football and we succeed, we make £40 million more than the next nearest Scottish club. by default of aiming at that level, you would just blow everybody else in Scottish football out of the water by just being so much better than everyone else because you get so much money, just by default. It's a no-brainer for me that you aim for this. You aim for the £40 million better off than the £1 million better off.
Yeah, yeah, completely. And also, even just if you have a Celtic team that's successful in Europe, that basically means it's going to blow away Scotland.
Yeah.
Like, you saw it with Rodgers the first two seasons.
Yeah.
Like, it, just on another level.
Uh-huh.
So there's no debate.
And the reason it didn't under Martin O'Neill was because they were spending tens of millions of pounds of taxpayers' money.
Yeah, yeah. I just want kind of like the club to be going for an exceptional candidate. And that doesn't even mean, you know, someone incredibly famous or whatever, but someone who's, I want us to be ambitious at every single level of the club. Mm-hmm. The academy, the first team, recruitment, everything. I want us to be as kind of, it's such a kind of trite thing to say, but that was my earlier kind of point about ambitious and demanding. Like, we should be demanding. Like, Ajax fans would be demanding.
Well, see your point about our revenue, right? There is zero, I can understand the board saying, see, right now, we don't have those cash reserves that Mark talked about to be able to compete with Benfica and Salzburg and Porto, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But based on our revenue, there is no reason why we cannot have the best sport. We cannot have the best of the rest outside the English Premiership level of clubs.
Uh-huh.
Sports science department in European football. There is no reason, cost-wise, there is no reason why we cannot have the best scouting structure, cost-wise. There is no reason why we cannot have the best academy coaches. And there's no reason why we cannot have the best academy infrastructure. All of those things, you know, there is no reason why we cannot be the best.
Mm-hmm.
They will, having those foundations and building blocks in place means that when you then start to develop that player trading side that we've talked about,
mm-hmm.
it's got a better chance of succeeding because the foundations are in place in every other aspect of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we've got the Hearts game on Saturday. Levine's already said that he's playing he's not going to want to risk us. You know, he's got a thinner squad than us, smaller squad than us. So he's not going to want to risk injuries against us prior to the cup final. Equally, I suppose there's an argument of he's not going to want to risk a real downer on the club by getting a 7-8-0 doing at Celtic Park by playing a team full of youngsters, right? But it's more likely he's going to be playing his fringe players.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think Lennon should do?
I think we should be giving, like, if Henderson's fit, I think he should be in. I think Johnson should be in. I don't think you should play a team of complete kids because, you know, it isn't very beneficial to them. And then the kind of rest of the team is kind of on, you know, fitness and injuries, kind of with thoughts to the cup final. Like, Tierney shouldn't be playing.
Mm-hmm.
Lustig probably wouldn't be playing anyway, I assume. I would keep Aya and Simunovic together.
Mm-hmm.
almost thinking about the qualifiers as much as the... like, they're more important than the cup final. I know everyone wants a treble. The qualifiers are more important than the cup final.
Mm-hmm.
The qualifiers are the most important games of the season.
Yep.
And one of the aspects that Celtic have kind of fallen down on is very often we've had centre-backs with no European experience going into those, like Hendry, and then previously...
Beaton?
I think there's 4 years in a row. Beaton with O'Connell.
Yeah.
Like, I think three or four years in a row, we had centre-backs who had never played a game in Europe. And it would be beneficial for us to have a good, solid centre-back partnership going into those games. So I would play those two. Ulrich won't be playing, so Toljan will probably be playing, or possibly put in Ralston.
Yeah, well, he was on the bench.
Let him play.
Yeah.
I'd probably go with Ralston, in fact. And yeah, and then, as I said, Henderson if he's fit, Johnson if he's fit, and then Edward, maybe. Who else?
Sinclair, Burke.
No. If Forrest is fit?
No, if Forrest, I don't think he's going to be fit. Forrest is struggling for the cup final, apparently.
Okay. Yeah, then. No idea, Burke, maybe, but. Where?
He's gone, completely. Okay, so you do that.
Yeah.
And. Would you play Rogic to try?
My dad's driving up from south of England for it.
Right.
So so hopefully we play. Actually, I'll take all of that back. Strongest 11. what'd you say there?
You play Rogic to try and keep him getting game time to improve.
Maybe. To be honest, not to be rude. To be honest, I don't care.
It doesn't matter. That game doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just because it's there, that's what I'm asking of.
Yeah.
Do you think he should... Martin O'Neill famously went to Tynecastle with reserves, you know, Sean Maloney and Simon Lynch arguing over a penalty to go four up.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah, but it would be good, I think, to have Johnson and Henderson in there. Because Johnson's kind of had that slightly negative game just gone after not playing for 2 months. It would be good to get him on the pitch and, you know, looking fairly decent again. And it would be good for Henderson because he looks to be a pretty talented young kid.
Yeah, so anyway, with that, the new technical director and the head of scouting at Celtic, Mark Cooper, I would say thanks very much.
Cheers. Thanks.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
So there we go, there's been another game against the Rangers, and another podcast has come and gone, and we are still 8 in a row champions, heading for a unique, an unprecedented, an unparalleled, beautiful treble. Mark and I there, hopefully setting the world to rights. We'll see what comes of it. Naturally, Peter Lowell and co don't listen to our podcast, so I'm sure absolutely they're not hardly sitting there going, "All right, okay, Harry and Mark have now spoken, we know what to do." Anyway, enough of that. Don't forget, this Sunday is the Celtic FC Foundation's annual badge day collection, and you can get your 8th badge on the road to your 9th and 10th. I think they're still looking for bucket collectors to round off and collect around the stadium. So if you go on the Celtic FC Foundation website, I think you might still be able to volunteer while you're listening to this. We'll see what happens. As I said at the beginning of the podcast, Rafa Benitez has now leapt up, but the way the odds have moved of late, I think basically nobody's putting money on who the next Celtic manager is, and a couple of bob on somebody seems to move their odds one way or the other. We shall see. Mark and I have laid out what we are looking for. Anyway, enough of us. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cooper, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring